We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
If you're a coach and you just have no idea how your hitters are going to perform, you don't have that intuitive element around it, you're really going to fall short. And so what we want to do is be able to arm those coaches with a tool that's going to kind of better inform their gut or their instincts. Data alone isn't valuable, but data plus your instinct is what's going to give you that competitive advantage.
A two-time All-Ivy League selection at Cornell, Brian McAfee had already completed a stellar college baseball career, but wanted more out of his college baseball experience. He enrolled at Duke in the fall of 2016, hoping for one more great season in a college baseball uniform. Well, after concluding that season at Cornell, the right-hander from Washington State quickly emerged as one of the top arms for Chris Pollard's club. McAfee secured 7 victories, which tied him for most on the team, and also paced the Blue Devils with 92 innings pitched, 65 strikeouts, and posted 8 quality starts, which included 3 complete games. Oh, and by the way, McAfee also helped lead Duke to its first NCAA tournament in more than 50 years. Today, our national pastime still drives Brian every day, even after he finished his professional baseball career. McAfee partnered with his dad, of all people, in a continuing effort to improve the game he loves, college baseball. That story and more coming up today. From Duke Athletics, I'm Chris Edwards.
This is Blue Devil 360, the official podcast of Duke Athletics.
Brian, thanks so much for the time. Welcome to the Duke Athletics podcast.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Chris.
I want to start kind of at the beginning of this whole thing for you. Let me go back to 2016. You enroll at Duke. You come from Cornell, go to Duke. Give me a sense of why Duke and what made you guys so special in that 2016 season.
Wow. First off, why Duke? So back at Cornell, medical redshirt, my junior season, I wasn't even aware that I could do this sort of thing. Like when I was thinking about sitting out that junior year, I was like, man, I lost a year of eligibility. I didn't know that you could transfer. play another, play a fifth year. And my coach brought it up at the time, Coach Walk, and he mentioned he'd reach out to a couple coaches. And like a couple weeks later, he got back to me and said that it was Georgetown and Duke at the time. And I was like, my eyes got huge. I was like, oh man, that's incredible. And then I think it was a short while after that that I'd gotten in touch with Coach Pollard, came out for a recruiting trip. And I mean, I was looking for somewhere that I could, you know, continue playing competitively, continue my education, do something that's going to advance my career in both the baseball side and academic side. And it was really a no-brainer once I got out here and visited. You know, it's too good to be true. So, you know, it was a really easy decision. And then the second part of that question, what made our team so special in 2016? It's tough to put to describe. You know, I think it was, I'd like to think it was, thinking back to our pitching staff, we're all about 30 years old. I'd like to think it was something along those lines, but I mean, up and down the lineup, we had talented young guys, talented old guys. Everyone was hungry. You know, we worked so hard that fall season. Going into the spring, we didn't really, there was a time thinking back to that season where we could have given up, where we were pretty far out of the chase. I remember, oh man, it must have been like 6 or 7 weeks into the season. We had a tough stretch of games and we could have, you know, turned it, we could have just given up. And I think there was a point where we turned it around, won a couple big series, and just kept fighting. So it was awesome. Fun thinking back to that.
When you think back on it though, and looking at the success that the program has had since, obviously you got to a regional in 16. That was the first one in 50 something years. Team went back in 18, went back in 19, went away from Omaha each of the last 2 years. How much pride do you take? And you know what? Hey, I was part of that group that really laid the foundation that started to change the culture of this program.
Yeah. It's massive. When I tell people that I played baseball at Duke, until recently, you know, people don't think of Duke as a baseball school. They're like, yeah. No, it's a basketball school. And, you know, now back-to-back super regionals, I'd always told people like Duke's a baseball school. Like this is, you know, ACC is competitive, but Duke's a baseball school. And it's so impressive to see what Pollard and everyone has, and JJ, everyone has done to the program there, bringing in top recruits year after year, being so competitive in ACC, and being on the cusp of Omaha, you know, back-to-back seasons.
I want to ask about the pro career before we get into the stuff post-baseball-wise, and that's kind of why we're here, but I want to lay the background a little bit. Played pro ball for a couple of years. When did you start to realize, okay, hey, I need to think about something outside of baseball once this baseball journey ends, because there's so few that get to the big leagues that have a chance to play at the highest level. So for you, when did the process start of, all right, I need to figure out what the next step is for me?
That's a great question. I've been thinking about it going into the draft myself. You know, I hadn't talked to many scouts. I think it was like 2 weeks before, it was just radio silence. So I literally had my car packed in North Carolina there, and I was either going to go west out to an internship and then a job at Nike, or I was going to go down to spring training. And you know, the call came with 20 minutes left in the draft. So at that point, you know, the switch flipped. When I was playing, I wasn't like set on, I need to make it to the big leagues. Like this is the only way it's going to go. It's like, all right, I'm going to do everything I can to make it there, but I've got some extra time. You know, you don't have to spend your whole day thinking about baseball. Once you get back to the hotel room, you can log in to, edX. I was taking some online courses at the time. It's not that I didn't have confidence that I wasn't going to make it. But there's definitely a ton of time you can take, to take advantage of these online courses and that sort of thing.
So for you, you're thinking about the online stuff, the baseball stuff doesn't work out. Take me through the end of baseball. You're done. And then you got to figure out, okay, what's next? I know you've got the stuff with Nike. We're going to talk about the new stuff that you guys are launching. But give me a sense of from the end of baseball to starting the company now to being at Nike, all the stuff that's encompassing that broad stroke of the question.
Yeah. I'll take you through the journey from about June of 2017 onwards. So I'd been playing pretty well in low A. We had a really talented team out in Bowling Green. We had rained out. Our clothes were soaked. We went on the road to, I think it was Lake County after that, up in Cleveland. Mm-hmm. It was a cold June night game. We're sitting out in the bullpen and the opposing team hadn't put our clothes through the dryer fully. And so we're shivering out there. And I came into the game and tweaked my lat. And so I had to sit out a couple weeks. You know, when you're on the road, out in low A, you don't want to be on the bench for too long because you're putting extra innings on the, you know, on your bullpen. You don't want to get sent back down to spring training and lose your spot. And so I sat out about 2 weeks for that, came back and was throwing better than ever. I was pumped. A couple days after that, my lat was still a little bit irritated. It wasn't back to full health. I kind of like jumped the gun coming back. And I ended up dislocating a couple ribs in my upper back. I didn't know it at the time. I had no idea what was going on. I was playing catch with my buddy before the game. And I just felt this weird pop in my upper back. It was like sharp pain. And then everything just, it was like the worst back spasm. But on my upper back, right on my throwing shoulder, and I had no idea what was going on. I hobbled back into the locker room. I remember our pitching coach came in, McAfee, what are you doing? Because it was like 10 minutes before the game, and I was laying there in my uniform on the couch. I could not do anything. And I couldn't even walk out to the bullpen for the game. I was like, man, I don't know what's going on. And so we ended up bussing back that night, long bus ride, you know, just bouncing around on the bus, like shooting pain, didn't sleep a wink. Got back into town. It was like 2 days before the trainer figured out what it was. So he had to kind of pop the ribs back into place and rehabbed back from that again. That was pretty tough, but I got released right after I'd gotten healthy at that point. So I went out and went back to my apartment at that point. It's a really weird feeling being, you know, you're living out in Bowling Green, Kentucky. All you know is baseball. We played like 60 games in a row at that point. My roommates are going to the game. I'm just sitting in the apartment, you know, it's like, what do I go watch? I cheer you guys on from the bullpen or something. I ended up waiting a couple of days, made some phone calls. I got an in with a indie ball team out in Lincoln, Nebraska. I was living with a really nice family out there that the dad was a taxidermist. So I was living in the basement of this house with a bunch of stuffed animals and bears and stuff. It's a wild time in indie ball and in the minor leagues, like the places you'll live and the people you meet. But I was out there for about a month. So I was a reliever in Bowling Green, moved out here, kind of ramped up really quickly, you know, coming back from an injury, throwing one or two innings or so. All of a sudden you know, throwing 7, 8, 9 innings. And I was having a blast, doing pretty well, but I was just absolutely beat. And it's a pretty long road back from indie ball. So it seemed like an insurmountable hurdle. You know, I had to get signed by a team, work my way back through. And I was kind of thinking ahead. I was like, okay, you know, I'm 20, was like 25 at the time now. Granted, guys in indie ball are, you know, 30, 31, 32 years old. And it's not to say I don't love playing baseball, but I don't know if I could see myself living that lifestyle for the sake of playing indie ball. If the dream of the big leagues had kind of fizzled away. So I was thinking about calling it a career. Got back to the locker room and I missed call, called the guy back, and it was a coach in the Seattle Mariners. And so I grew up in Seattle, huge Mariners fan. They wanted me to come finish the season out there in short season, which is about 20 minutes from my house. So I lived in Princeton, West Virginia in a motel, you know, Bowling Green, lived with the taxidermist. It was a long story, but I ended up getting to play in Everett, Washington, living at home, playing minor league baseball, and I played all right there. You know, I think I was still struggling coming back from the injury, and so I kind of knew at that point that my career was over. And so the Mariners called me in November after the season, and they're like, hey, you know, we're gonna let you go. And I was like, that's totally fine. Like, I'm at this point in time, you know, I'm ready to move on to the next thing. It's interesting when you finally realize that it's, you know, it's time to move on to the next thing. Because I'm a pretty competitive person. You know, I'd been thinking for the past 7 years of my life at that point, like, how can I get to the big leagues? But when you finally come to that realization, it's almost, it's like peaceful in a way, that I was able to transition, move on to the next thing. And then, you know, as soon as that happened, I was, hyper-focused on, you know, what's my career path? How am I going to, you know, move my way through this? What do I need to learn? Who do I need to talk to? Wound up at Adidas, worked there for about 7 months. And then I got a call from my former manager at the time at Nike, who I'd been chatting with in the past. Data scientist position opened up, and it was a no-brainer to make the switch over there.
So you mentioned the data scientist stuff at Nike. So what's the day-to-day like for you working with those guys?
Yeah. I definitely got my foot in the door before I was like fully ready. Like, I didn't have the skill set. I felt like I was drinking from the fire hose for a while there. You know, I was learning all these new things. Right now, having worked at Nike for a couple years, you know, I feel a little bit more established. I feel like I know what I'm doing a little bit better. But a day in the life of my work at Nike, I do a lot of things inventory related. So I won't get too into the weeds here, because I know this is an athletics podcast, not a data science podcast. But I set our inventory targets at our factories and distribution centers. So if you think about how much we need to hold there, we need to fulfill all the customer orders that come in. We don't want to hold too much inventory. So what's the right amount?
All right. So now to the thing we're here to really talk about, the new company that you and your dad have sort of launched together.
Yeah.
It's a way to, I think, for you, and tell me if I'm wrong, to stay involved in the game of baseball, try to make the game a little bit better. So tell us kind of the backstory of what you guys are doing.
Yeah, absolutely. We had this idea, and when I say it was about 2 or 3 years ago, we'd really been talking about it for 5 or 6 years, kind of messing around in Excel, making some like simple spreadsheet models and stuff. But the idea behind Sequencer is to take a technology that exists at the major league level, kind of closed up in these front offices. It's a simulation of a baseball game. And what it does is it replicates all of these in-game percentages, you know, error rates, base running rates, replicates what hitters, their likelihood in plate appearances. So how often are they going to hit a double, triple, home run, walk, stolen base, like whatever it is, combine all those together and then be able to generate your own historical data, essentially. So you can figure out which sequences of hitters are more efficient, figure out what your run expectancy and probability is in certain base situations. It sounds really complicated. And I'll tell you, there's being on the data science side in the corporate world and the baseball world, like, the baseball side is a lot more, it's more fun and more intuitive. Like, it's almost like you're just trying to design a game from a fan's perspective. Like, if you're sitting in the stands and looking at it, what are the percentages that you would give each situation? And so what we do is we look through historical data and pull out those percentages and then just put it into code, and then make a user interface that's intuitive and simple, and that allows college baseball coaches and softball coaches to be able to really easily use it.
Where did the idea come from? I know you said you and your dad were playing around, but where did the first brainchild, the infancy stages, mm-hmm. where did the idea come from?
My dad, I got to credit him for everything here. He was a big dice baseball fan growing up as a kid. So he kind of designed his own games. And I don't know if anyone's listening that's ever played MLB Showdown, but it's a, I was a big fan of that game. It's a similar concept. You know, you're rolling dice, you get to move your players around, and
Maybe for the older generation too, it's kind of like a Strat-O-Matic a little bit too.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. There's a couple games like that. And if you build a really generic model like that, you know, you can play around with it and, you know, mm-hmm. run it in Excel and everything. But the more precision that you get, the more useful it actually is to make decisions. So it was totally his idea. And then I realized that big league teams were using this sort of thing. Think like your Moneyball type of model to evaluate how effective, how valuable players are. So got to credit him for the idea, but it was about 2 years ago at this point. I was driving up to the mountain with my buddy to ski, and we were kind of chatting about it. And Johannes, he's a total like entrepreneurial minded guy, and he's like, "Why don't you turn this into a business?" I was like, "It's kind of interesting. Like, how much? Like, what would it take to do that?" And so, I got home that day, and once I catch wind of these ideas, I get really fired up. I've had a couple things in the past that like totally would never work, but in this one, I started thinking about it. I was like, "Okay, what's it going to take?" You know, call a couple friends, figure out, you know, what, you know, I need a web app around it. I need, you know, a website. I need to, like, what's the user going to see? Like, what's the value here? And so started working on it. And then, you know, shortly after I'd had that idea and started building this out, I talked to Pollard, and Pollard has given me some feedback. And so he's kind of been involved from the start, and, you know, he's going to do whatever it takes to win games and get that competitive advantage. And so it was incredible having feedback from him as I continue to build this thing out.
Are you hoping this becomes something that you, like a software that you can sell toward these college programs, whether it be a baseball or a softball program?
Yeah. We already are. It's been challenging to sell on top of, you know, full-time job in Nike. So I'm getting up at, you know, 5 a.m. giving demos to teams on the East Coast. We've got a solid number of clients already, and we launched a couple weeks ago. So, it's really exciting to hear the word start to spread. You know, we'll talk to a softball team, and they've been, their friend over at so-and-so college has told them about it. So we're going to be at the ABCA, NFCA major conferences. We're a pretty low budget operation. You know, it's, myself, a former teammate from Cornell, and a girl that played softball at Arizona. But we're on the road right now. We're giving demos to coaches, trying to get the word out there as best we can.
From a softball standpoint, I realize that baseball and softball are very similar, but there are some nuances that are different about both games. So how do you adjust that based on softball versus baseball? Because what baseball coaches are looking for may not be what a softball coach is looking for.
Yeah, absolutely. Good call out. It was a lot harder than I expected. I expected to just be able to go in and, use a different data set for all the base running percentages. What's really different about the softball game is the element of slap hitting. Mm-hmm. So I won't try to get into it because I'll absolutely butcher it if I try to explain what a slap hit is. Essentially, it's you want something soft on the ground. You're a fast runner. You're a left-handed hitter. You want to force the defense to try to make a play. It's kind of like a running bunt, I think.
Like a push bunt almost, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like think of Ichiro if you're a baseball fan, and like think of how he's running out of the box, putting it on the ground. So that was the biggest difficulty, is modeling slap percentages. Like, how do we find how base runners, what their percentages are on slap hits? And we have a partnership with a company called 643 Charts, and they have this enormous database of everything that's happened across college baseball, college softball, play by play, right? Who's on base? How fast are they? So it's a matter of kind of splitting that in half and then understanding in those plate appearances on the softball side, what the hitter is trying to do. Is it a slap hit? How do we make that accessible to a coach if they have a slap hitter? How do they tell the simulation that that is, you know, slap hitter? Here's what situations they're gonna do in each of the situations. Outside of that, and outside of the percentages of like air rates, wild pitches, that sort of thing, it's a very, very similar sport, but we have to be careful about all those nuances like slap hitting.
There, obviously, baseball has become very data driven. There's a lot of analytical data. There's a lot of analytical companies. You can think of the Diamond Chart. You can think of TrackMan. All the stuff that these guys are using. How do you set yourself apart in this field of like, okay, there's all this data, so we need to become one of the leaders in this forefront?
Yeah, it's it's a really competitive industry, and I'm slowly starting to realize that as we get into it a little bit further. There are no companies that do lineup optimization or simulation modeling like us, which is really exciting. So we're the first mover. We're the first person that's tried to bring this technology into the sport. I think I always ask myself when I get these crazy ideas to try to start something up, I'm like, why has no one else done it? There have been a couple models in the past that have been a lot more simple. Maybe it's like there's one website where you go in and enter a bunch of on-base percentages and slugging percentages, and it tells you the best lineup. It's such a complex problem that if you make a simple solution for it, it's just the value is going to be lost in the simplicity. So to be able to start something like this and for it to actually have any value, you have to be really precise with the simulation and the details and the data that you're putting into it. If you start guessing or kind of doing some back of the envelope stuff, you kind of lose all the value. And I think the reason that nothing has existed so far is that you need to have a really thorough understanding of the game. You need to have really good data, and then you need to be kind of nuts and be able to put your head down for like 2 years and work on something without seeing any value in it. There's a lot of descriptive analytics tools out there. I'll use the word descriptive analytics and predictive analytics. It's pretty easy to say, here's what's going on. Here's everything that's happened. You know, here's the video. Here's like, you know, spray charts, that sort of thing. But then when you start to get into the world of, okay, let's take that and let's layer a predictive model on top of it, it gets a little bit more tricky. And I've definitely experienced it and explaining it to some coaches. You know, there's a number of predictive models out there that don't necessarily have any merit at the college level or at baseball, because it's kind of a black box. You know, it doesn't really mean anything. It's hard to use. But I would like to think that our predictive model, because it's simply a baseball game or a softball game, holds value. And so I think a combination of those three things, getting the data, putting your head down and coding on it, and being able to like understand how those things should fit together in a simulation, kind of make it difficult for competitors. Granted, I'm super excited. I'm kind of waiting for the first competitor to come out, because it means that our idea has value. And I think it's going to make it easier for us to sell this thing into coaches once there's other companies out there that are trying to do it as well.
Why do you think that college baseball and college softball is the perfect demographic, perfect market for a sequencer?
Yeah, there's several thousand teams. It's a little overwhelming at first, you know, having such a big market that's completely untapped. We're, you know, shooting messages out on Twitter, email, trying to get our content out there. It's really competitive. As a coach, you're doing whatever you can to win games. I would have in the past said that there's a decent amount of money in it, but budgets are pretty tight right now. So it's, you know, as the sports continue to evolve, coaches have a decent amount of budget. They are hungry to get whatever edge they can, whether that's 3 to 5 runs through lineup optimization and simulation modeling. They're really hungry to learn. And I think that's been the most enjoyable part for me through all this, is being able to teach coaches how this thing starts to work and see, you know, how hungry they are to learn, how willing they are to accept these sorts of concepts. And, you know, the coaches that are more willing to learn and accept these things are the ones that have been able to implement BLAST and Rapsodo and develop players better and win more games and continue to progress their career. So it's a friendly industry for a new technology to come into.
I've got three or so more, and then I'll let you go, because I know you've got a lot of other stuff going on today. You kind of alluded to this a little bit, but there are still a lot of old school people in the game of baseball that maybe have not adapted to the lineup optimization, to the data, to the saber metrics, whatever term you want to use. Obviously, this is the new way of doing things. What do you say to people that say that analytics and data are bad for the game of baseball?
Yeah, you can't get by without your gut and without your intuition as a coach. There is elements of our tool that are going to require that. You know, how is your player going to do on this given game? How's he going to match up against this pitcher? You know, we can try to forecast that as best we can, but if you're a coach and you just have no idea how your hitters are going to perform, you don't have that intuitive element around it, you're really going to fall short. And so what we want to do is be able to arm those coaches with a tool that's going to kind of better inform their gut or their instincts. And I think when it comes down to it, your gut is really kind of like it's almost like a history of everything you've seen over your coaching career. And if you can see more informative data points and be able to make sense of those, you start to have a better instinct down the road. Say you use Sequencer for a year. Next year, you're coaching and you're building lineups. You've kind of got an idea of how hitters should be sequenced and what decisions you should be making on the bases and that sort of thing. We really want to reiterate the point that, you know, it's not a one-stop shop. Like, you can't just take everything that this thing says and run it out there in the field. Data alone isn't valuable, but data plus your instinct is what's going to give you that competitive advantage.
You mentioned this project with your dad, and I want to dive into that for just a second. The older you get, the more that you're realizing how special those relationships are, obviously, with your parents. How special has it been to be able to work on this and now go out and market it and sell it with something that you and your dad created?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a really cool story. And, you know, I got to credit my dad for everything. You know, on the baseball side, when I was 5 years old, I quit baseball because I told him I wanted to focus on soccer. I told him I want to be a soccer player. And he was like, yep, absolutely. Like, we'll do whatever you want to do. And I think the next year when I was 6 years old, we were every single day that summer, that fall, we were in the backyard throwing the baseball. I mean, like a ruthless amount of catch, you know, every single day. Go over to the park, he'd throw me batting practice out in front of the house. I mean, thinking back to the time commitment, I mean, it was hours. And then year after year after year, I started throwing harder and harder, and he's getting a little more nervous catching the ball. So I got to credit him for everything as I was developing as a baseball player. And then on the business side, I've got to credit him for the idea for this, for kind of laying down the framework for the whole simulation, for everything. So it's been super special. And, you know, coaches, they want to buy something that's useful and that's going to help them, but it certainly helps to have a unique story behind it as well.
All right, let me kind of come full circle with this as we start to wrap up. Think back to that 2016 season, a lot of great games that you pitched. Is there a game that stands out to you when you think about that season?
Good question. Trying to think back to what my first few starts were. I know I got hit around a little bit. I think it was at Coastal Carolina. They had some rowdy fans out there. I still remember.
That ballpark makes Williamsport look big. Okay. Like, yeah. The ball carries out there a little bit.
Yep. I was getting hit around a little bit. Certainly didn't help. I think there was might've been a no doubter home run in there that probably would have left the yard at really any park. I remember after that game, I gave up like 4 or 5 runs or something, and kind of came back. I was a little down on myself. I was like, man, I gotta get going. And I think it was the game after that it was against Virginia, start of ACC play. And I'd actually pitched against them the previous year when I was at Cornell. And that game against them at Cornell, I pitched really well. And that was my first game back from my back injury. So it was the first team that I'd seen in almost 2 years. And so pitching against them again, with Duke, I remember I got hit in the thumb with a line drive in the eighth inning, was able to come back and close it out in the ninth. It was special. I feel like it was a kind of a turning point in the season for me. Not necessarily like I didn't need the confidence, like I didn't need to go out there and throw a really good game, but it was exciting nevertheless. Getting into ACC play, getting a big win against those guys, it was certainly special.
Yeah, I think that was the one I was thinking about too, because I remember we were doing a post game and Coach O'Connor came over and shook your hand before they got on the bus to head back to Charlottesville. So yeah, I think for me, that's where things started to turn around for the team that season, at least in my mind, where you started thinking, okay, maybe we got a shot to get to an NCAA tournament.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, good time to turn it around is start a conference play.
If people want to learn more about Sequencer and find out about you guys, where can they do that?
Yeah, www.sequencer.com, SEQNZR.com, or shoot me a note, Brian McAfee on Twitter.
Brian, this has been awesome. Thanks for doing it. Great to catch up with you. And I hope to see you soon down the road, maybe here in Durham next spring.
Fantastic. Thanks for your time, Chris. Appreciate it, man.
That's it for today. Thanks for listening. Make sure to subscribe and let us know which guest you'd like to hear on the show. From Duke Athletics, I'm Rebecca Fiorentino.
And I'm Chris Edwards.
This is Blue Devil 360, the official podcast of Duke Athletics.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.